I signed up to feel real. I didn't know it meant becoming someone else's puppet. They stripped away my name, my memories, my choices, until even my thoughts weren't mine. Each room pulled me deeper into their control. A mirror that blinked before I did, a voice that spoke my secrets out loud, strings that moved my body like it craved surrender. But something inside me never broke. Because when they asked me who I was, I remembered how to lie. And that's when I stopped being their subject and became their undoing. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Marionette. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Interview. I don't remember applying. That's the first thing I thought as I sat there, legs crossed too neatly, hands folded too precisely in my lap. Like someone had placed me here, posed me even. My name was on the sign-in sheet in perfect cursive, but I couldn't recall ever writing it. Maybe I sleepwalked into this. Maybe I had some kind of blackout. Maybe this wasn't real. The waiting room was sterile in a way that didn't feel accidental. Everything was white, too white. The walls. The ceiling. The couch beneath me, which didn't even have creases. The only color came from a single red dot on the far wall. A camera. Watching. Always watching. There were no magazines. No clock. No receptionist. Just silence. Heavy, intentional silence. The kind that presses against your ears and makes you aware of your own breathing, your heartbeat, your every tiny movement. I thought about leaving. I should have. My body even leaned toward the door, like it still remembered how to flee. That's when the voice came through the intercom, calm, measured, unmistakably male. Come in. The door clicked open. Not all the way. Just enough to imply that it wanted me. So of course I went in. The hallway was darker than it should have been. The kind of dim where your eyes never fully adjust. I walked with my arms close to my sides, shoulders tight, pulse quickening with every step. I felt like a ghost in someone else's dream. At the end of the hall was a glass door. Etched into it was a single word. Observatory. The door opened without me touching it. I stepped into a room made entirely of glass, perched like a cube at the very top of the building. Every wall, every panel crystal clear. I could see the entire city stretched out beneath me. Cars like ants, people like specks. The sky was gray, restless, as though it, too, wasn't quite sure what was about to happen. And then I saw him. He was standing by the window, back turned to me, hands folded behind him like some kind of stage director waiting for the curtain to rise. Tall. Still. Impossibly calm. I've been watching you, he said without turning. His voice was sharp but smooth, like a scalpel wrapped in velvet. I don't remember applying for anything, I said. And even as the words left my mouth, I realized how small my voice sounded. How uncertain. That's because you didn't, he replied. You were selected. Curated. Found. I hesitated. Found. Finally, he turned to face me. He didn't look how I expected. No lab coat, no clipboard, no disheveled genius hair. He wore a black turtleneck and slacks, simple, elegant. Like he belonged to some other time. His face was ageless, but not in a youthful way. More like, he had decided aging was beneath him. Tell me, he said, gesturing toward the sleek, low chair across from him. Do you feel real? The question knocked the wind out of me. I sat down, heart suddenly racing. I guess so. He smiled, just barely. You hesitated. I looked away, ashamed. Why was I ashamed? I didn't even know this man. I'm not here to judge, he said softly. I'm here to offer you something. A path. A chance to become whole. The words landed with eerie weight. I tried to laugh it off. This is starting to sound like a cult. He didn't laugh with me. A cult demands worship. I demand truth. I shifted in my seat, uncomfortable. What is this place? He didn't answer me. Instead, he walked to a minimalist desk in the corner, picked up a single piece of paper, and returned. I only ask one question, he said. One that most people never bother to answer honestly. He handed me the paper. There was nothing on it but one typed sentence. Do you want to feel real? No fine print. No disclaimers. No details about what came next. I looked up at him, waiting for more. You won't remember this conversation after today, he said quietly. But you will remember how you felt. What happens if I say no? I asked. He gave a slow blink, then tilted his head. No one ever does. I stared at the question again. The words blurred, then sharpened. Do you want to feel real? It felt like the paper was breathing. Like it pulsed with my own heartbeat. I could feel it in my fingers, tingling under my skin, as if the ink itself was alive. Yes, I wanted to feel real. I just didn't realize what I was giving up to get there. I picked up the pen beside the paper. My hand hovered for a second, as if somewhere deep in my subconscious, something was screaming, "Don't do this." But that voice was soft. And his voice, his presence, was thunder. So I signed. He nodded, and for the first time, he smiled like a man who'd just won a war. "Welcome to the program," he said. "You'll begin tomorrow. The deconstruction will be gentle. At first." And with that, the lights dimmed. The city below seemed to disappear into fog. And I swear, just before the room went dark, I heard something moving behind the glass. Not footsteps. Strings. Chapter 2, The Rooms. They told me there were 7 rooms. But no one showed me them. No doors labeled in gold. No guiding hand or map. Just a single corridor that seemed to stretch far longer than it should, lined with silent, numbered doors that weren't marked with numbers. They were labeled with questions. Who are you? What do you hide? What do you need? Who must you betray? What will you become? The 6th and 7th doors were blank. Just black with no text. No prompt. As if by then, the questions wouldn't need to be asked, they'd be answered. They told me the rooms weren't for testing. They were for unraveling. Not in the dramatic sense, not like tearing fabric, but in a quieter, more surgical way. I wouldn't notice when it started. I'd only know after the seams had come undone. That's what they said in the orientation, though they never used that word, orientation. It was more like a ritual. They called it a preparation. A woman in all white spoke to me in a voice like lullabies and eulogies. "You've signed the contract, and now we will begin the removal of external illusion," she said. Not illusion, external illusion. Meaning the lie wasn't in the rooms. The lie was me. They stripped me of my belongings. Clothes, phone, wallet, even my earrings. They didn't ask me to undress, they simply waited. Like they knew I would. And I did. Slowly. Hesitantly. I folded my clothes and placed them in the bin labeled ego. I was given a plain, gray uniform. No tags. No buttons. Just smooth fabric that fit without clinging. Somehow it knew my size. Or maybe it just reshaped me to fit it. Then they led me to the first door. The first question. Who are you? I paused in front of it, stomach tight, throat dry. The woman didn't speak again. She just stood there with her hands clasped and her face blank, like a mannequin that hadn't been programmed with emotion. The door opened on its own. I stepped through and found myself swallowed by white. Room 1 was pure, blinding white. Not just in color, but in sensation. It had no shadow. No depth. The floor was white. The walls were white. Even the air felt blank. I couldn't tell how big it was. I couldn't even hear my own footsteps. There was no furniture. No exit I could see. No sound. Except for the mirror. It stood in the center of the room. Freestanding. 8 feet tall and framed in chrome. But it wasn't really chrome. It didn't reflect anything but me. Not the room. Not the space around me. Just me. Except not quite. I stepped closer, and the edges of my reflection shifted. Not a lot. Just enough to confuse the brain. My face looked longer, like my jaw had narrowed. My left eye was ever so slightly lower than my right. My spine looked like it curved too far to the left, like a question mark trying to correct itself. I tilted my head. The mirror tilted back, delayed by half a second. I lifted my hand. It lifted too, hesitant, not mirroring but mimicking. The lights grew brighter. Painfully so. I squinted, and the version of me in the glass squinted faster. That's when the silence broke. "Describe what you see," said a voice from above. Not the professor. Someone else. Cold. Robotic. I turned in a slow circle. There was no speaker. No vent. Nothing the voice could have come from. The ceiling blended with the walls. "Your answer is required." I looked back at the mirror. My reflection was gone. In its place was a child. A girl. Maybe 7. Wearing a faded pink dress. Barefoot, with knees scraped raw. Her hair was tangled, her face tight with fear. She stared at me like she knew exactly who I was and hated me for it. "What do you see?" the voice repeated. I couldn't lie. I tried, but the words wouldn't come. "Myself," I whispered. The child in the mirror blinked. Slowly. Sadly. "Incorrect," the voice said. "That was someone you left behind. Try again." The image changed. Now I saw myself, but different. Taller. Stronger. Standing straight with eyes that didn't flinch, even under this lighting. She wore a black suit. Red lipstick. She looked like someone who never hesitated. Someone who had never once apologized for taking up space. "Who is this version?" the voice asked. "I don't know. Liar." The lights flickered. The image morphed again. This time it was me now, but crying. Mascara smeared. Mouth open in a scream I couldn't hear. She looked so small. So helpless. I backed away. The mirror followed me. I turned to run. There was nowhere to run. Just endless white. No seams. No corners. No air that moved. "You are not the one asking the questions," the voice said. I dropped to my knees. I don't know why. It just happened. Like my body was giving up before my mind could object. And then the mirror spoke. Not the voice above, the mirror itself. My own voice coming from the girl inside. "You don't know who you are," she said softly. "That's why you came here." And suddenly I did remember something. Not how I applied. Not how I got here. But why? I remembered waking up every day feeling like I was wearing someone else's skin. Like my life was a role I'd been cast in without auditioning. I remembered nights lying awake, staring at the ceiling, wondering if I'd ever said anything truly original, or if every word that came out of my mouth was just a reflection of someone else's expectations. I remembered standing in front of mirrors back home and not recognizing myself. Fixing my hair anyway. Applying makeup anyway. Going to work anyway. Because that's what puppets do. They go anyway. "End of session one," said the voice. The lights dimmed instantly. The mirror vanished into the floor without sound. I stood up slowly, blinking hard. There was a door now. Seamless and white, but open. On the wall beside it, another question had appeared. "What do you hide?" I stepped forward. Because the unraveling had begun. And some part of me, dark and buried and aching, wanted to be undone. Chapter 3, The Stranger in My Skin. By room 3, I stopped recognizing my own thoughts. It didn't happen all at once. There was no moment where I gasped and realized I was thinking in someone else's voice. It crept in like fog under a door. One subtle shift at a time. A sentence I didn't remember forming. An idea I couldn't trace. A laugh that didn't sound like mine anymore. They'd given me no clock, no calendar. I had no idea how long I'd been inside the program. Time had become a suggestion. One I no longer had the authority to decline. I woke up to darkness again. Not sleep, reset. They didn't let you drift off naturally. You never got to curl under a blanket and blink into dreams. One moment you were alert, the next you were waking up on a cold surface, eyes dry, throat raw, like you'd been screaming into nothing for hours. Room 2 had left me shaken. It had taken something from me. Not just the mirror. Not just the voice. Something deeper, some essential sense of self. I felt emptied. And yet lighter. That scared me. Now I stood before the third door. It had a question etched into it like a wound. What do you need? I didn't know how to answer that. I didn't know who I was supposed to be anymore. How could I know what I needed? The door slid open before I could finish that thought. The room inside was unlike the others. It had color. Warmth. There was a low hum playing from invisible speakers, something that sounded almost like jazz. The lighting was soft and amber, like candlelight filtered through whiskey. And there was a table. Two chairs. Two cups of tea, still steaming. And sitting across from one of them, me. No, not me exactly. But close enough to knock the breath from my lungs. She looked like I used to look, back before this place started slicing pieces off me. Same hair. Same posture. Same nervous hands. Even the same little scar near her eyebrow from when I fell off my bike at age 10. I didn't move. I couldn't. She smiled. A small, knowing smile. "I was wondering when they'd send you in," she said. Her voice was mine. Not just the same tone. The same cadence. The same pauses. Like an echo of something I hadn't said yet. I swallowed hard and stepped toward the table. "What is this?" I asked. She shrugged. "Call it calibration." I hesitated, then sat across from her. The chair was warm, like someone had just gotten up from it. The tea smelled like lavender and citrus, comforting, nostalgic. "I don't understand," I said. "Not yet," she replied. "But you will." She reached forward and took a sip of tea, eyes never leaving mine. "You remember me," she continued. "You remember being me. But you're not me anymore. You're something they're building. Something new. That's why I'm here, to see what's left." Her words hit me like a slap through glass. "I don't understand what that means," I said again, quieter this time. "You will," she repeated. Then leaned forward and whispered. "They gave me your memories." I stared at her, lips parting. "That's not possible." She smiled again, softer this time. "Isn't it? You told them everything, remember? During debriefs. The confessional interviews. Room 2. The way your mother used to look through you. the teacher who said you were forgettable, the boy who left, the night you stopped eating for 3 days just to see if anyone would notice. She sipped again. They notice now. I felt nauseous. Cold. I pushed the tea away without drinking it. Who are you? I whispered. I'm the version they'll replace you with. Once they're done testing. Silence hung between us like a noose. That's not real, I said. You're just another hallucination. A trick. She chuckled, and it sounded just like the laugh I used to have before I learned how to laugh quieter. I thought the same thing, she said. At first. Then I woke up in the next room over. Had my own tea. Met my version. She told me everything, too. I blinked at her, heart thudding. There's more than one of us? She nodded. As many as they need. I wanted to scream. To shake the table. To shout at the cameras I couldn't see. But instead I asked, what are they doing to me? They're carving out the parts that resist, she said. They're looking for the version of you that will obey without breaking. Why? She tilted her head, mockingly curious. Why does anyone train a puppet? I stood up so fast the chair fell backward. My hands were shaking. I'm not staying here, I said. I want out. She didn't argue. She just looked down at the tea, swirling it gently. You'll ask for that again in room 5, she said. They'll even offer it to you. And you'll say no. I froze. What happens if I say yes? She looked up at me with something almost like pity. Then you disappear. I stumbled backward toward the door I'd come through, except it was gone, replaced with smooth wall. No exit. No escape. I don't want this, I said. I never wanted this. You did, she said gently. You just didn't realize how much it would cost. A sharp buzzing filled the room. The lights flickered. Her image began to distort, face warping, features bending. Her skin turned pale, then paper thin. Cracks formed around her mouth. System override. A voice said, this time mechanical and flat. Simulation destabilizing. I turned to run. Now there was a door, but not the one I entered through. A new one. Black. Open. Pulsing. Behind me, her face twisted one last time. Her eyes locked on mine. You'll forget me soon, she said. That's how this works. I stepped through the door, and everything behind me evaporated into static. The hallway outside was colder. Longer. Empty. But in my chest, something burned, a single, searing truth that I couldn't unlearn. I was not alone in here. And worse, I wasn't even me anymore. Chapter 4, The Pull of Strings. I woke up wired. Not metaphorically. Not in the jittery, over-caffeinated, wide-eyed sense. I mean physically. Literally. Wired. Thin, transparent filaments had been threaded through the skin of my fingers, my wrists, ankles, collarbones, even behind my ears. They glistened faintly, catching light that didn't seem to come from any source. No bulbs. No windows. Just a gentle glow that surrounded me like a synthetic halo. I was standing upright. Not lying down. Not waking up in a bed. I had no memory of being moved. My arms were suspended slightly, elbows bent in a soft, puppet-like posture. My legs stood firm but not locked, hips angled delicately like I'd been arranged with care. Like art. And for a moment I didn't move, not because I didn't want to but because I couldn't. The wires pulled taut. Then relaxed. Pulled again. And I began to understand. They weren't just attached to me. They controlled me. The room was black, an infinite void, or at least it gave that illusion. There were no walls, just a dark, empty stage. A single spotlight illuminated my body. I couldn't see beyond it. I didn't even cast a shadow. Then came his voice. Not the anonymous voice from room 1. Not the robotic one from room 3. His. The professor. My dear Marionette, he said softly, like a man soothing a child from a nightmare he himself created. Welcome to room 4. I tried to speak. My lips parted. But no words came. My tongue didn't obey. He chuckled. You'll find that autonomy has been temporarily reallocated. Don't worry. This is not punishment. It's demonstration. With no warning, my arms lifted. Smooth. Precise. Like a ballerina mid-pose. I hadn't moved them. They moved me. My left foot glided forward. Then the right. A slow, deliberate walk, circling the spotlight. My head tilted, chin angling downward like I was studying something on the floor. Then my hands folded gently in front of me, one wrist bent at a delicate angle. I realized, with cold horror, that I was performing. And the worst part, it was graceful. Not robotic. Not jerky. It was beautiful. You feel it, don't you? He said, his voice like silk sliding across glass. The ease of it. The relief. Surrender is a release from decision-making. from failure, from expectation. He paused, then added with a smile I could hear. From identity. My body twirled once, elegantly. My spine arched, arms outstretched, like a swan caught mid-flight. It was the kind of movement I could never have done on my own. Not in real life. Not in that old body, the one I thought was mine. I was crying. The tears slid down my cheeks silently, unnoticed by the strings. Why are you doing this? I asked, or at least tried to. The voice that escaped my mouth didn't sound like mine anymore. The professor didn't answer right away. Then I heard a low mechanical hum. Something lowering from above. A device, spherical and smooth, descended in front of me like an alien moon. It had no lens, but I knew it was watching. Recording. People often misunderstand freedom, he finally said. They think it's the ability to choose. But freedom is overwhelming. Paralyzing. It requires constant accountability. Choice becomes weight. And eventually collapse. The sphere hovered closer. A soft red glow pulsed beneath its shell. So we remove the choice, he whispered. We give structure. Pattern. Order. My body knelt. Not roughly. Not forcefully. Gently. Like I wanted to. Like my muscles had always yearned for direction. My arms lifted again. This time they pressed against my chest, one hand flat over my heart. My fingers moved on their own, tracing small circles over my sternum. It felt good. Unnervingly good. I gasped. A soft, involuntary sound that sent heat rushing up my neck. The wires responded, tightening slightly. Not painful. Just present. You feel the pleasure of obedience, the professor said. It's primal. Cellular. You've been taught to resist it. But deep down, your body has always known. I wanted to scream that he was wrong. But I couldn't. Because a small, shameful part of me agreed with him. This control, it felt like being held. Like being seen. Like finally having the noise inside me silenced by something larger, more complete. I was no longer alone inside myself. The sphere tilted. A blue light replaced the red. You see, my dear, he continued, we're not building puppets. Puppets require puppeteers. We're creating a new model of human, one that wants to be moved, that finds serenity in direction. My head tilted back. My mouth opened. My voice whispered something. I'm not real without you. I didn't say it, but I did. My voice. My mouth. My words. But not my will. The strings buzzed gently, and I felt something new praise. Like electricity laced with approval. My skin tingled. A reward. He was training me. And I was responding. You're learning so quickly, he said, pleased. You are an ideal candidate. He stepped into the light at last. I saw him, really saw him. Impeccable posture. Dark eyes that glittered with amusement and calculation. He looked at me the way a sculptor looks at his masterpiece. With pride. With obsession. I told you on day one, he said. You signed because you wanted to feel real. That's what I'm giving you. Purpose. Shape. A place within the system. He stepped closer. His shoes were silent. You should thank me. I wanted to spit in his face. I wanted to bite his throat. Instead, my body bowed, forehead to floor, palms flat in supplication. I thank you, I whispered. And I felt the ecstasy of compliance. The strings released me suddenly. I collapsed, gasping. The rush of freedom was sickening. He turned away. You'll crave the strings soon enough, he said. We all do. The light shut off. The wires detached with a soft click, vanishing into the ceiling above. And I was left there, trembling in the dark. Not in pain, but in mourning, because I had felt peace in that control. And now that it was gone, I wanted it back. Chapter 5, The Echo Chamber. Room 5 didn't have walls. It had voices. Not sounds. Not music. Just voices. Mine mostly. At first, the room seemed empty, pitch black, like I'd been swallowed by something too large to understand. No corners. No floor I could see. I could feel the surface beneath my feet, but even that sensation felt too distant to trust. Then the whisper came. My own voice. A younger version. Please don't leave me. I froze. It was so quiet, so close to the surface of silence that I almost mistook it for a thought. But it wasn't in my head. It was out there. In the air. Surrounding me. Then another voice. I don't matter. My voice again. Older now. Flat. Resigned. I ruin everything I touch. I turned in circles slowly, desperately trying to find the source. But there was no speaker. No vent. The sound wasn't directional, it came from everywhere. And then it multiplied. Layer after layer of memories I didn't remember recording. Phrases, confessions, sobs, shame-soaked syllables from nights I spent alone, hating myself. All of them spilled out into the black room like venom. I'm too much. I'm not enough. I should have died when I had the chance. I dropped to my knees. I covered my ears. It didn't help. The sound wasn't traveling through the air. It was inside me. No worse. It was me. You're hearing your own psychological residue, said a voice, different this time. Not mine. Clinical. Detached. It was the professor's assistant. Her voice had a smooth edge like sanded glass. Every subject leaves behind vocal traces. Thoughts spoken muttered, screamed in solitude. We collect them. This room is your archive. I choked on the weight of it. No, I said aloud, barely recognizing my voice anymore. I didn't say these things. Not all of them. Yes, you did, she replied calmly. If not aloud, then inside. That's all that matters. The sound grew louder. It wasn't just voices now. It was breaths. Gasps. The low, rhythmic hitch of panic. The sound of me trying to keep myself together in bathroom stalls and beneath blankets. Quiet sobs. Sharp exhales. Guttural, broken attempts at silence. Make it stop, I whispered. No, she said. You need to listen. You need to remember. I squeezed my eyes shut. The voices didn't care. They crescendoed, building into a storm of sound so loud and so personal that it felt like I was being torn open from the inside. And then, one voice cut through the others. Clear. Measured. Gentle. You'll never be more than this. That one. I remembered. I had said it to my reflection during a particularly bad week, 3 years ago. After a rejection letter. After another silent dinner with my parents. After curling up in bed with makeup still on because I didn't see the point. I'd whispered it into the dark. And now it came back to me like a ghost returning to claim my skin. You're not showing me this to help me, I said, teeth clenched. The voice, hers, the assistant's, paused. No, she said. This is not for healing. This is for conditioning. The lights turned on just slightly. Not enough to see the room, but enough to see myself. Dozens of versions of me surrounded me in a circle, each frozen in different states. Crying. Laughing. Yelling. Smiling. Kneeling. Slumped. Hysterical. Defeated. Holograms. Projections. Echoes. They stood in perfect, silent stillness as the room filled with noise. Their mouths moved with the phrases spilling through the air. I backed up, stumbled into one. It shattered into dust. I fell. And when I hit the floor, it was cold. Metallic. Real. Not some illusion. That's when the new voice started. It wasn't mine. It wasn't theirs. It was his. The professor. Steady. Warm. Fatherly. I understand your pain, he said. I have felt it. I have watched you carry it for years. The room began to shift, walls forming out of light, gradually revealing panels, blinking circuitry, thin screens with brainwave patterns. I wasn't just being watched. I was being studied. Let me help you, he continued. Let me show you how to silence the voices. My throat constricted. My fingers curled into fists. I don't want to forget who I am, I said. Good, he said. That means the reprogramming is working. You're finally becoming aware. Awareness is the first step toward surrender. The sound dimmed. Slowly. The voices softened. Became whispers again. Then faded altogether. The silence was worse. Because now it was just me. And the memory of everything I'd just heard. Stand, he said. My body obeyed. I didn't want it to. But it did. The silence made it easy to follow. It made rebellion feel like noise. Disruption. Disorder. Standing felt peaceful. Very good, he said. A panel slid open in the wall. A single chair sat inside. It was familiar. Wooden. Upholstered. My grandmother used to have one just like it. I want you to sit, he said. I sat. It smelled like her. I felt warm. Safe. Dissociated. A screen descended in front of me. On it, a short video began to play. It was me. Sitting in a chair, smiling. Confident. Clear-eyed. I'm not broken anymore, I said on the screen. Thanks to the program, I've learned who I really am. Then it cut to another version of me. Cleaning a mirror. Reciting daily affirmations. Exercising. Typing. I am productive. I am focused. I am grateful. The montage played on. Each version of me, quieter. Simpler. Less alive. But functional. Efficient. Smiling. You see, the professor said, we are not erasing you. We are refining you. Polishing the dull edges. Sanding down the noise. Soon, you will only hear what we place there. The screen blinked off. The chair slid backward. The door opened. On the wall beside it, a new question blinked in red. Who must you betray? I stared at it, trembling. And I knew the answer was me. Chapter 6, The Rehearsal. Room 6 was a stage. Literal. Hardwood floors polished to a shine so blinding, I saw myself in them before I ever looked up. It was massive. A theater, but also a cage. The walls stretched high above me into shadows I couldn't touch, and directly ahead, a thick red velvet curtain loomed, unmoving. An enormous spotlight hung above, casting a pool of golden light exactly where I stood. The rest of the space remained swallowed in darkness. Rows upon rows of seats sat ahead, hundreds of them, stretching into the abyss. Empty. At least, that's what I thought at first. Until they began to fill. Not by motion. No footsteps. No whispers. Just appearance. One blink, and the first row held 4 people. Another blink, and 2 more rows were full. By the time I exhaled, every seat was occupied. And not by strangers. They were all people from my life. Some dead. Some alive. Some long forgotten. My mother sat center row, 3rd seat from the aisle, wearing the silk blouse she'd worn the night she told me I was a disappointment. Her hands folded neatly, her expression unreadable. My high school counselor beside her, eyes glassy, chewing invisible gum like she had back when she suggested I lower my expectations and consider something more realistic. My ex-girlfriend, my college roommate, my childhood neighbor, my old boss, even my 6th grade math teacher. All of them still. All of them watching me with faces that didn't blink. Statues carved from the deepest shame I'd buried. I turned in a slow circle. The stage was set. The curtain behind me trembled slightly, as if something massive moved just behind it, breathing. Then came the voice. Not the professor's. Mine. I am grateful, it said. I am fixed. I am nothing without you. The words came out of my mouth without passing through thought. I clapped a hand over my lips. I hadn't meant to speak. I hadn't even felt the muscles move. A low hum vibrated under my feet. And then I heard it, applause. Not thunderous. Not even loud. Just enough. The crowd clapped with synchronized rhythm. Mechanical. Unfeeling. Their hands moving in perfect unison, their faces blank. I staggered backward. No, I whispered. This isn't real. But it was. I could feel the heat of the lights. The tightness in my chest. The sting behind my eyes. I didn't know how long I stood there. Then the lights dimmed and the curtain rose. Behind it, screens. Rows of them. Towering. Stretching from floor to ceiling. Each screen displayed a different version of me. One scrubbing a toilet. One typing at a terminal. One nodding obediently in a white room. One whispering affirmations into a mirror. One smiling as she accepted a pill. One blinking in perfect rhythm to a blinking light. I fell to my knees. Because I remembered them. All of them. Not memories exactly, imprints. Glitches. Scenes I'd flickered through during the blackouts. During the training. During the resets. Each of those versions was me, molded to a different shape. Each one a test. Which would break first? Which would comply fastest? Which one could be mass-produced? You've been performing all your life, the professor said. His voice came from the house speakers now. Deep. Resonant. You played the good daughter. The hard worker. The eager student. But no one ever gave you a script. So you improvised. You stuttered. You failed. A sudden gust of cold air swept across the stage. He continued. Here, we give you the lines. We provide structure. A role. A purpose. The spotlight focused tighter. Brighter. Blinding. My body straightened against my will. My arms lifted. A gesture of greeting. My mouth opened. And I began to speak. My name is Subject 53. I have completed 6 weeks of emotional recalibration. I no longer experience doubt, panic, or self-questioning. I no longer dream without permission. I no longer remember my previous attachments. Each word was a violation. Each syllable felt like betrayal poured into my mouth. But I couldn't stop. I was performing. Not for approval. For survival. The lights shifted. The crowd leaned forward, every head tilting at once. And then I saw her. In the back row. The girl from room 3. The version of me they'd created. The one they said would replace me. But she wasn't clapping. She wasn't smiling. She mouthed a word. Just one. Run. A static crackle filled the air. The projection screens began to glitch. One by one, the images stuttered. Froze. Fractured. The version of me typing began to scream. The version of me taking the pill spasmed. The version in the mirror shattered. I looked back to the audience. They were gone. Empty chairs. The spotlight cut out. I was in darkness again. Alone. Except I wasn't. A soft light glowed in the center of the stage. A mirror. Not like before. This one was simple. No distortion. No manipulation. Just me. I walked toward it. I stared. I saw myself raw. Pale. Sunken. Eyelids twitching. Lips cracked. Hair limp. But I was still there. Still breathing. Still inside. Who are you? The mirror asked, voice trembling. I didn't answer. Because I didn't know. But I wasn't going to let him answer for me anymore. A low tone echoed, an alert. A panel opened on the floor. A new door. No label. No question. Just black. An invitation. A trap. A test. I walked toward it anyway. Because I knew whatever was on the other side, it was the final act. And I would not end this story as someone else's puppet. Chapter 7. The Final Cut. There was no door to room 7. Just a breath of air. A draft from nowhere. And that impossible hum, like static, pulled through the veins of the building itself. It wasn't silence. It wasn't noise. It was waiting, like the world itself was holding its breath. I stood at the edge of the dark corridor, still shaking from the last room, still tasting the lines they forced into my mouth, the words they programmed into my throat like code carved into flesh. I thought I was empty, but something remained. Anger. Not the kind that explodes. The kind that simmers, quiet, focused, sharp. Purpose. So I walked forward, one foot after the other, past the threshold that no longer separated anything. Room 7 had no number. No question on the wall. No soothing voice to guide me. No humiliating reflection. No performance. It was a void, but not the kind I'd seen before. Not that theatrical darkness of the other chambers. This was real emptiness. And at the center of that emptiness, the control room. Not metaphor. Not a metaphor for the mind, or metaphor for the system. An actual physical space. A high dome chamber filled with screens, data streams, glowing panels, and towers of servers that pulsed like hearts. Walls lined with subject files, rows and rows of names, numbers, charts. And in the middle of it all, him, the professor. No longer a voice. No longer an idea. A man. He was seated at a circular console, typing slowly with gloved fingers. Calm. Relaxed. Like this was a Sunday ritual. He looked up as I entered. And he smiled. You made it, he said, like we were old friends sharing a secret. I didn't answer. My feet moved slowly over the glass-like floor. Beneath it, I could see lights dancing shapes. Video feeds. Movement. Other subjects? Or ghosts? He gestured to an empty chair across from him. I didn't sit. His smile grew wider. Not kind. Not cruel. Just proud. You're stronger than the others, he said. Most don't make it to this room. Some break. Some obey. Some simply disappear. I swallowed hard. Why me? His eyes softened, almost sad. Because you asked to feel real, he said. And deep down you meant it. He rose from the console slowly, smoothing down his dark jacket. Everything about him was composed. Gentle. Like a surgeon before an incision. I didn't lie to you, he said. None of this was a trick. This was clarity. Structure. What we did was remove the noise, the confusion, the endless feedback loop of ego and shame. We stripped away the static of self. And replaced it with you. I spat. He tilted his head, bemused. With order. I shook my head. With control. His fingers twitched slightly. And behind me, I heard the locks engage. I turned to find the door gone. The room sealed. The walls thickened with shadow. But I wasn't afraid. Not anymore. Because I saw it clearly for the first time. This wasn't a prison. It was a stage. And I'd been cast in a part one never auditioned for. I remember room 1, I said, stepping closer. The mirror that blinked before I did. He nodded. A simple test of neurological suggestion. Mild but effective. Room 2, when my voice echoed things I never said aloud. He smiled. Residual thought pollution. We extracted your private narratives and externalized them. Useful for behavior modeling. And the puppet strings, I continued. The pleasure in obedience. The body betraying itself. He sighed like a teacher with a favorite student. Most find that part liberating. I stepped even closer. Now I could see the lines on his face. The exhaustion behind his eyes. The price of obsession. He was no longer untouchable. No longer mythic. He was a man addicted to control. You gave me a script, I said. But you forgot one thing. His smile faded. What's that? I learned how to improvise. And I moved. Not like a weapon. Not like a rebel. But like a mirror. I mimicked the grace he'd trained into me. The poise. the precision. But this time, the strings were mine. I was the puppeteer now. I swept my hand across the panel to his left and found the root directory. The names of every subject. A digital vault of identities. Subject 01. Subject 02. Subject 53. Subject 109. Subject 145. Hundreds. Thousands. You built a factory, I whispered. But you called it a cure. He lunged for the override, but I was faster. I hit the command key. Release protocol initiated. Stop, he hissed, his voice sharper now, desperate. You don't know what you're doing. I turned to face him. No, I said. I finally do. The lights in the chamber began to pulse red. The console blinked with warning scripts. Containment failure. Files decrypted. Subjects reactivated. I could see the screens now, rooms opening. Subjects waking. Wires snapping. Faces once hollow filling with rage, grief, memory. The system was collapsing. He fell to his knees, hands trembling. You think you've won, he gasped. But they'll be lost without this. Chaos will take them. I knelt in front of him. No, I said softly. They'll be free. He reached for something at his hip. One last attempt to shut it down. A failsafe. But I was already moving. I gripped the wire from the back of my neck, the final one they hadn't cut. The one that kept me docile. And I ripped it out. Pain exploded behind my eyes. But beneath the agony was something pure. Silence. For the first time since I entered this place, I was alone in my mind. No noise. No echoes. No commands. I stood tall, even as the walls trembled, even as the sirens wailed, even as he wept like a man mourning a religion. And I walked out, through the hallways now illuminated by chaos. Other subjects following, eyes wide, back straight, unsure, but alive. No one spoke. We didn't need to. We had each heard the same voice for so long. We'd forgotten what it meant to be silent on our own terms. But now we remembered. I reached the exit. The sun blinded me. I blinked into its warmth. And for the first time in what felt like 100 lifetimes, I didn't wonder who I was. I didn't ask what I needed. I didn't wait for instructions. I stepped forward. On my own. No strings. No script. Just me.